It was a really cool experience to actually have all the Maple Leaf jerseys for a whole season. I'm so proud to represent Canada around the world. So to be able to do that in every event for a year was a special experience.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro, and with me is Matt Hansen. Hello, Matt.
Checking in.
Yes, you are checking in. How are your legs doing?
Oh, they're just fine. It's been a few days since you wrecked them, but they're fine.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit about that. I am guilty a bit of that, but my legs were pretty toasted too. Before we whine and whinge about what our ride did to us, Leah Karchman is on the episode today. She has been a significant force in Canadian cycling for more than 10 years. She's been to two Olympics, Rio and Tokyo. And she announced at the end of, around the end of August, that she would be retiring. So we are going to catch up with Leah and, yeah, find out what the last 10 years have been like and maybe what the future holds. But first, before that conversation with Leah, Matt Hansen, your legs. Let's talk about why they're so tender.
Well, because you told me that I needed to go riding with you on Sunday or I'd be fired. So I did. And we went for 5 hours on the gravel bike and pushed way too big gears. And, you know, cut to, I felt terrible that afternoon. I didn't want to tell you how terrible I felt because I thought you would, I don't know, mock me. And then I'm happy to hear that you were also feeling equally as terrible.
I was feeling pretty pretty shelled after that day of riding. But I did not tell you you'd get fired, though I do very much appreciate that you got up at such an ungodly hour to meet me. It does almost seem a little unfair the way I structure these weekend rides where I tell you to get up really early, come to my place, and then I set the route. I don't tell you where any of the hills are, but I attack before them. And what I particularly love about this ride is, like, it was on Sunday, and on Saturday you did a pretty big ride as well. So you already showed up to our ride tenderized.
Yeah, it was clever. It was a clever move on your part. I like the fact, viewers at home, I'm half an hour away from Matthew's place, so that adds another 10K. But yeah, that was the nice part, is that even when we started, I was like, oh my God, I'm tired. In the first 5K, I was like, oh my God, I'm tired. And of course, you think, well, I'll just feel better as a ride goes on. And, well, I didn't. Viewer? I didn't.
Viewer, listener, we call them.
I was like, well, I mean, I'm looking at, oh, right, because they're not, this is radio, I forgot.
This is a podcast. Yeah. All right. All right. you are tired. It was instructional, though. It was instructional. We were playing with some new gravel bikes that have come into the office. One is super new. It is the Argon 18 Gray Matter,
which I started on.
Yes. And we also had a Canyon Grizzle with about 30 millimeters of travel in its front fork.
Just enough to take that edge off.
It was good to swap a mid-ride and compare notes and compare differences.
And I do apologize that my saddle height is 1 millimeter less, but I needed to change it, you know? I'm very precious.
1 millimeter? Almost half a centimeter.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to be funny here. You ruined the joke, but yeah.
Well, yeah, the princess and the pea here, I could tell. I could tell. It was throwing me off. That's why I had to bring the torque wrench.
Yes, you did. And you torqued it good.
Well, what was your favorite part of the gravel ride?
Like getting home, maybe, I guess. Oh, I mean, I did like it when we tried going down some of those steep descents, and, well, that didn't go so well for one of us, me. But I also liked, the water crossing was fun. That was always nice to get a soaker. I didn't even know there were river crossings anymore in cycling. I thought those were banned by the UCI.
This was an unsanctioned ride.
Right, bandito style.
Yeah, wow. I bet you're looking forward to the next one.
Can't wait. Can't wait. The good news, it'll probably be colder because it was actually a bit of a scorcher for a September day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It won't be this weekend.
That's good. I'm busy.
I'm sure you are. I'm sure you're very busy. Oh, probably watching Worlds.
Yep, yep. Should be pretty great. I'm stoked to see what's going to happen with both the men's and the women's races. I mean, there's a whole bunch of races, but I'm feeling pretty good about the elite women. I mean, the men's team looks pretty strong, but the elite women's team looks especially strong. I think someone could pull something out and have a pretty good surprise.
Nice, nice. Well, watch this space. Watch Canadian Cycling Magazine, the website for that. All right, without further ado, here is my conversation with Leah Kirchman. Leah Kirchman, in late August, you announced that you'd be retiring from pro cycling at the end of the season. Tell me about how you came to that decision. What told you it was time to retire?
Yeah, that was a big announcement to make, and it was a bit of a process, I guess, coming to that decision. Yeah, I guess there's kind of some factors that contributed to it. You know, the lifestyle of being a professional athlete really demands everything from you. And, you know, every decision and action that you take can impact your performance. And yeah, I just found myself increasingly interested, I guess, in also doing other things, which is just really difficult to do when you're so committed to being, trying to be one of the best cyclists in the world. As well, I've also found that I was missing Canada, that, you know, I spend so much time away from home and really miss friends and family, and you know that maybe it was time that I would like to go back and pursue something different. So those were probably the biggest factors in my decision.
I want to pick up on a few of those things you've said, like the other things that have been capturing your interests and how the life of a pro rider is so all-consuming, maybe. Maybe that's too dramatic, but you know, you can't mess around with your fitness or anything like that. But before we do that, I want to ask about your last race with your team, Team DSM. How was that race for you?
Yeah, it was a nice race to end with the team, the CMAC Ladies Tour. It was a world tour race, 6 days racing in the Netherlands. It was really successful. We won 3 stages and then the overall classification with Lorena. But the racing was like so crazy all week. It was classic Dutch racing, like echelons and small roads and lots of crashes and chaos. Some tough climbing stages in Limburg. Actually, it was nice. We were racing in my backyard here in Sittard and in Limburg. So it was kind of special to have a bit of a home race to finish with. Yeah, I finished that in a really nice way with the team getting the win. But at the same time, it kind of confirmed to me that I was okay to leave this kind of racing behind, that, you know, I'd survived a lot of these races.
Were you in that race? I'm assuming your role was, I guess you had to help control at the front of the race for much of it. As you mentioned, your teammate Lorena Wiebes was leading and she took the GC overall. So did it fall to you and some of the others on Team DSM to control things?
Yes, that was definitely my main role for the race, was to keep it under control and get as many of the stages to finish in a bunch sprint. And I think Lorena's shown time and time again this season that if it's a sprint, then she's really the best in the world right now. So it's a motivating rider to ride for. And with this stage race, I think she really showed that she's more of an all-rounder than we thought. You know, we didn't think that she had a shot at winning the GC in this kind of racing with the hills and the time trial. But yeah, showed again that she's a world-class rider. So,
as you mentioned, Sittard is your home base, or it's like your home away from home in the Netherlands. What drew you to that town in the south of the Netherlands? I ask because Girona and more Andorra seem to be pulling in the pros who are based in Europe. But why did you base yourself in Sittard?
So I originally ended up here in 2016 when I first joined the team, because they had a team house set up in a small neighborhood nearby called Waterslay. And it was just an easier transition, you know, to live with other teammates and to just fully embrace the culture here. So I lived there for a few years, and then the team actually has since built a lot of apartments where more riders have come to live. So yeah, a lot of the other women and then U23 riders live in the same training center. Personally, I found it nice to live with teammates. You always have somebody to train with. And this location has also been quite convenient for accessing races, like especially in the springtime, we're right next to Belgium and yeah, in the Netherlands. So everything is just, you know, a couple hours away and you can be back right after the race.
And what's the riding like in that region?
So I think it's the only hilly part of the Netherlands. So I quite like that. If anybody's watched Amstel Gold Race and knows the Kauberg and those kinds of climbs, like that's really my backyard. So lots of short, punchy climbs. It's pretty great that almost every road has a bike lane or a bike path. So you feel quite safe as a cyclist in this region. It's a beautiful place to ride, like especially on a sunny summer day, then you can really enjoy the views.
I'm sure maybe it's less pleasant on a blustery, rainy spring day.
Yeah, it also can rain quite a bit in this region, I will admit.
Now, you're in the midst of packing up and coming back to Canada. What do you think you're going to miss the most of your European home base?
Yeah, I think like what I mentioned, the cycling culture is pretty incredible in the Netherlands. And I think that's definitely one thing that I'll miss a lot. And of course, I'll miss my teammates and the friends that I've made in this region.
Your team, Team DSM, has been around for about 12 years. As you mentioned, you've been on it since 2016. How has that team changed in those years?
It's evolved quite a lot since I first joined. Yeah, just the philosophy of the team is to keep challenging. That's the kind of the tagline and philosophy. And the goal is just, you know, to continuously improve. And that's definitely what they do as a team. So, you know, when I first joined to now, like one of the biggest changes I think has been in the support of the women's program. It really built from a smaller team to now it's yeah, just even more supported with every year. And I think just in terms of like the services that are offered by the team and the overall structure and what's going on behind the scenes, you know, to even building this new training center here, all those things have been developed as I've been part of it.
Before Team DSM, you were on Optum presented by Kelly Benefit Strategies. You know, I don't miss the name. I don't miss the name of that team. It's always so, takes forever to say, but it's now Human Powered Health. But you're on Optum for 3 years. How did that team help you in your development as a rider?
Yeah, so I was actually on the team for 4 years, but I really enjoyed my time with Optum. I think it had such a nice culture as a team, and just everyone was so nice, and we had a lot of fun going to all the races. And I think it did really allow me the opportunity to grow and develop as a rider with every year with them. And, you know, especially like from the first year on, then we started also coming over to Europe for blocks of time and, you know, made a goal of targeting the team time trial at Worlds, for example. And definitely through the years with the team, I grew and developed as a rider myself.
I've always thought of that team as secretly Canadian. Some of your teammates at the time included Annie Ewart, Denise Ramsden, Joelle Newmanville, and Lex Albrecht. And there are many in management who come from Canada. Did it feel kind of Canadian to you?
I think so. We did have quite a strong Canadian contingent in both the staff and the riders. And I think that's also why I liked the culture so much. Yeah, really fun to have so many Canadians around.
Both DSM and Human Powered Health are teams that have been around for a while. Stability like that seems pretty notable to me. You know, in cycling, we do see squads disappear when sponsorship dries up or something like that happens. How does the stability of a team serve a rider like you?
Yeah, I think it's impressive when teams demonstrate this kind of stability from year to year. And I think it, you know, really shows that they're doing something right. And that's what we need more of in cycling. We need more stable teams and that can guarantee a future in the sport. And it means a lot, I mean, to riders and staff to have that kind of stability, because then I think you can really find your place and really grow within an organization. And you just can't get that same kind of experience, you know, if you say need to change teams every single year, that's going to be very different.
I imagine things like, I'm impressed that DSM has so much infrastructure for its riders, from like housing, for example, and apartments. And that must, you know, take such a load off for a rider to not have to scramble for a place to live. And a rider can, then she can just, you know, get to the business of training and racing and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. No, they're definitely trying to think of all of those different things you need to have in place to perform at your best. And yeah, just a simple thing like where you're living, that is a big thing. And just all, there's so many performance factors that they do take care of.
Races, like teams, also can face uncertainty. You've done events that are no longer around. You did the Tour de PEI in 2009. You've made appearances at BC Super Week. You won the Delta Road Race there in 2014. BC Super Week is on a hiatus, and we hope it'll be back. The same goes for the Tour of Gatineau, which started around the time you went pro. You won that race in 2017 and 2019. Is there a race that is no longer around, but that you wish would make a return?
That's a great question. I want all those races to make a return. I think this is really what Canada needs right now. We need some races to come back so that, you know, riders have opportunities to develop locally. Yeah, I remember Tour PEI was my first UCI race. I think I was a guest rider for Team Atlantic there, and it was a really cool experience because I think it was one of Tara Whitten's first road races, and she was so strong that she ended up with the lead of the race, and then we were racing for the GC and none of us really knew what was going on, but yeah, then she ended up winning the race. So yeah, for me, having a race like Tour PEI was really a chance for me to develop and get some international experience in Canada. So yeah, I'd love to see that come back. Of course, BC Super Week was always one of my favorite race series of the year, like just the atmosphere, and you know, especially like a race like Gastown just is amazing for the fans and a fun experience as a rider. So definitely hope to see that back. And yeah, in recent years, like Gatineau has just been, I think, one of the most important development races with both the time trial and road race. I mean, another one I would just love to see back. And yeah, maybe the answer is we need to get a few races that are scheduled well together that could convince teams to come and kind of make it a trip.
Yeah, as we're speaking, the Quebec Grand Prix is on, and that is an event that has done much for the men's side of Canadian cycling, from helping riders to develop in Canada to attracting teams to come over. You know, it's worth the trip for them. Kind of like what you're saying, it would be nice to have a similar draw on the women's side to bring all the heavy hitters to Canada, to North America for development and inspiration for the next generation.
Yeah, and that would be a new race I would love to see on the calendar if they could add, you know, a women's race next to the men's world tour races in Montreal and Quebec. I think you could see some really exciting racing from the women on those courses. And maybe even trying to plan it next to the world championships could be an idea.
Oh, right. In Montreal. And did you ever do the World Cup in Montreal when it was around?
No, that Yeah, that was the same year I did the Tour PEI, but unfortunately, I never got to race the World Cup there.
Well, yeah, here's hoping some of those races do make a return. One of your favorite results was the team time trial win at the World Championships in Bergen, Norway in 2017. Tell me why that race and result is important to you.
Yeah, this is really one of my favorite memories from my career. So the team decided to make the team time trial this year, especially. And, you know, the whole year we did a lot of training camps. We worked so specifically on equipment and timing and order and just training all the small details of the event. Yeah, going into this race, like we weren't the favorites. We were kind of the underdogs. We hadn't won a team time trial during the year before. And yeah, just everything on this day just seemed to fall together perfectly. Like we really rode a perfect race as a team, which almost never happens in cycling, or especially not team time trialing. It felt like almost, I wouldn't say effortless, but it's like everyone was doing their turns exactly what they had to do. It felt like everybody got to use their strengths perfectly in this race. You could actually still recover in the group. It was so smooth. And yeah, in the end, we just rode so fast and came across the line and to take the win. Yeah, and it was just so unexpected at the same time. So I think that made it even more special. Then to top off the day, this is the day that the men's team, Senweb, also took the win, kind of riding the same way. They also came in as underdogs, and we raced on exactly the same course, the same distance. And then, yeah, it was just so cool to have the men and the women really win together on the same day.
One of my favorite results of yours, or set of results, was your run of wins at the national championships in 2014. You won the TT, and then the road race, and then the Criterium. After you won the road race, I'm pretty sure I wrote a story with a spicy title, Can Leah Kirchmann Be Stopped? It's driving me nuts because I can't find that story right now. I'm 99% sure it went up after the road race online. But I love that you answered that question emphatically. It was no. That year at Nationals, you couldn't be stopped. What was it like having three Maple Leaf jerseys for a season?
I do remember this Nationals fondly, and it was a really cool experience to actually have all the Maple Leaf jerseys for a whole season. I'm so proud to represent Canada around the world. So to be able to do that in every event for a year was a special experience.
Let's talk about La Course by Le Tour de France. You rode that race 8 times. You were on the podium at the inaugural event. You were third in 2014 and second in 2019. What's the significance of that race that you attended so many times?
Yeah, this was always a significant race on the calendar because I remember back in 2014 with the first edition, like it was such a big lead up to the race. You know, this was, there was a petition for a women's Tour de France, and really a group came together to put pressure on the ISO to include the women again. And then we ended up having this event. And then it was even more special that Optum got an invitation to race that year. So there was this whole build up to it. It was a significant event because it had been years and years since the women had competed in the Tour. So there was a stage race in the past, but it had just been absent from the calendar. So yeah, from the start, like we thought this is a huge opportunity. Everybody knows the Tour. It's a big platform. And this is a place that cycling can grow the race from. You know, start with one day and then hope for a stage race. Yeah, now we saw that's what it turned into this year. We have a stage race back on the calendar. I remember it was really special to, and a surprise for myself to end up on the podium, especially in that first edition.
How would you characterize your evolution as a rider?
Been quite an evolution over the years. Just if I describe it in terms of strengths and things like that. Then when I first started out, I was definitely more of a pure sprinter on the road. And yeah, something like time trialing was a big weakness, and I struggled on climbs. But with more years and different focus and development, then I think I've really become an all-rounder, and now show that, well, I turned time trialing into one of my biggest strengths, and I can do quite okay on climbs. So that would be my basic evolution as a rider.
Also on the topic of evolution, there's been a lot of progress in women's cycling since you began your career. What are some of the most important developments you've seen?
Yeah, it's actually amazing if I think of all of the progress that's happened since I first started out. Some of the biggest changes have been the implementation of the Women's World Tour. It was quite significant. So now we have a World Tour series, and this was started in 2016 and replaced the World Cups. But with the World Tour, they also made World Tour teams. And, you know, now we have different, I guess, categories of teams. And there's also minimum standards that are required to compete at that level. So I think it just ensures a better environment for riders at the top end of the sport. Along with that, they recently introduced the minimum wage, which is huge because it means that more and more riders are able to compete full time as a pro. Whereas in the past, like I would say, most women didn't make enough of a salary to actually live off of competing as a pro, and had second jobs or had to do other things to get by. Those are definitely some of the biggest changes. And just in terms of like the race calendar that we have available to us, that it's grown so much every year. And there's, you know, great standalone women's races. And you see a lot more of the big, what were traditionally big men's races now also have a women's race as well. So I think that's a sign of progress.
What would you still like to see in women's pro cycling? What are the next steps?
Definitely still progress to be made. I think one thing is that there's been such a focus on the World Tour level of the sport and the top end that I think there needs to be focus as well on, you know, the continental level and on rider development. Yeah, the kind of the tier below. Because I think it's quite hard to make the jump all the way up to the highest level of the sport. I think there's also space for something like more under 23 races that would also help with that rider development and transition, where right now it's kind of a big change to go from junior into the top and elite right away, compared to with the men's side that where they have U23 races. And I think we do see this change starting to happen. Like this year at Worlds, there's a U23 jersey and category, but it's actually within the elite race, which is a little bit strange. So I think most riders would like to see it separate in the future, really to have a standalone race. Yeah, that would be one change. And then I think just striving for continuous, like, equality between the men's and women's side of the sport in terms of rider support and salaries and prize money and media exposure, all of that can still be improved.
You're part of the Cyclists Alliance, which provides support to female pro cyclists during and after their careers. Can you tell me more about that organization and some of the things you've helped out on at the Cyclists Alliance?
Sure. So, it's been really great to work with the Cyclists Alliance. It was first started by a group of current and retired pros, and now it's being led by Iris Lappendel. She's a Dutch racer. It's basically a women's cycling union. We're striving for official recognition by the UCI, but we're waiting for that. We're still working to provide all the services and represent the riders as best as possible. yeah, there's just so many things that the cycloscience does with the aim of improving the sport and really, yeah, taking care of the riders and speaking up for riders. It's hard to say even everything they're doing, but some things are like providing mentorship opportunities, connecting pros with developing riders. They provide, legal services if someone has an issue with a team or, needs help for, really anything. Like if they're experiencing harassment or have a bad experience, then this is somewhere that's safe that they can come and get help. Even, help reading contracts, just providing webinars on different important topics. Like there's, so much that's being offered that I think it's really valuable to become a member.
Yeah, it's amazing all the things that a rider has to negotiate. I'm sure very few riders get into cycling and say, I can't wait to pour over a contract. Or worry about stuff like that. So, that sounds like a pretty important organization for all riders. What's a piece of advice that you might give a young rider who's keen to race her bike and possibly pursue a career as a cyclist?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, I would say like my best piece of advice is to keep it fun. We ride our bikes because it's fun. So even if you're striving for big goals and trying to develop and always get to the next level, like always try to come back to the reason that you're doing it and find ways that continue to bring you joy.
When I spoke with Swain Tuft about his pro career, I asked him about public speaking. He's done a bit of it because of cycling, and it's something he didn't like at the beginning. It's a skill, though, he developed and has grown more comfortable with. I'm wondering, are there any skills or things that you've had to learn as a cyclist that you didn't expect you would have to?
I think you become very good at understanding and planning logistics as one thing, and being adaptable. And like, I almost feel like I could probably be a travel agent now because of all the experience I have. And I know all the travel tips and how to adjust to the situation. So that's probably a big one.
Speaking of travel, as this episode is coming out, the World Championships in Wollongong, Australia are going on. And then after that, you have a lot of travel. But on the World Championship races, what are your thoughts on the road course that's there in Australia?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really challenging race. There's quite a lot of elevation on the course if you've seen a map or the profile so far. Yeah, it's quite a lot of elevation and it's a technical course. So I think we're going to expect quite a hard race, but we have a good team for it.
I find it funny that there's a climb. It's not the major climb, but there's a climb called Mount Pleasant, and I imagine that'll be very unpleasant.
Probably anything but pleasant on your bike.
And what's next after the racing wraps up for you?
Yeah, I'm very excited. I have a small vacation planned once the race wraps up. I'm going to stay in Australia for a couple of weeks, first with a Canadian friend who lives in Sydney, and then I'm going to travel up the East Coast and do a bit of a bus tour and check out some cool locations.
Will there be any cycling involved, or will it be a complete vacation from the bike?
I think it's going to be a complete vacation from the bike, but I'm still planning it to be a very active vacation. I would love to go for some beautiful hikes and go snorkeling and still movement, but maybe some time away from the bike.
Do you have, following that vacation, any immediate plans or things that will keep you busy or possibly be moving you into the next chapter?
Yeah, so at the moment, I don't have any set plans. I have a lot of ideas and things like that, but I've also been kind of purposely trying to wait until after the World Championships and after my trip to really fully explore them. But one thing I am currently doing and intend to keep doing into next season is that I'm acting as the managing director for Global Relay Bridge the Gap Fund. I don't know if you know much about the organization.
Well, remind us. I know it was started quite a few years ago, and it has a lot of board members. Like, I believe Kevin Field is on it, as well as I know Ryan Anderson is involved. Maybe Will Rutley still?
Yeah, so it was founded originally by Ryan Anderson and Will Rutley. And then now the board members are Kevin and Swain, Ryan, Andrew Pinfold, and Aaron Willick. So, you know, quite a lot of top racers from Canada. And the goal of the organization is really to provide support to developing Canadian riders and helping them literally bridge that gap, you know, between being a junior and then making it and getting a professional contract and competing at the top of the sport. Yeah, we do that through different ways. So one is just providing grants. We also started a mentorship program and have hosted some webinars to get the information from, you know, experienced Canadians in the sport to those athletes and coaches that might benefit from hearing it. Yeah, so I'm quite motivated. Like, we have a lot of flexibility and opportunity to be creative there. So yeah, I'll continue my work with them.
I find that interesting because as you said earlier, you identified maybe something that needs to happen in women's pro cycling, which is making that leap from junior to pro. And here you are at Bridge the Gap, which is, you know, you are actively helping to change that.
I guess so. Yes. Oh, and I just wanted to add that it's been really nice that we got Carol Ann as on board as well this year. And she took over the mentorship program and has been leading a lot of great initiatives like a camp and a Canadian Cup series.
You have a degree in nutrition and public health. I've mentioned in previous interviews that we've done that your banana oat pancakes are probably one of the most popular recipes we've ever run. On a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being highly likely, what do you think is the likelihood of you working in the field of nutrition after racing, or maybe in relation to racing?
It's a great question. It could be like a 6 or a 7. I don't know. I do really love food and cooking and nutrition, so I think it will be a part of my life in some way.
At the top of the interview, you mentioned, you know, as you were thinking about retirement, and there were other things that were capturing your interest that maybe were on or off the bike, I'm not sure. But what were some of these other things that are, capturing your interest?
Yeah, I think it's even just the idea of, you know, being active in different ways and getting into different sports, or, you know, not necessarily just being tied to a training program and needing to do a specific thing each day. I think having a bit more freedom with that is exciting to me. I would love to get back into skiing, for example. I'm maybe interested in going back to school at some point. I'm just interested in, exploring different opportunities. I don't know. I feel like I've been in the cycling world for so long that I just would like to take some time to see what else is out there, to have different opportunities and kind of explore.
What is one thing about your career that you are most proud of?
Yeah, I think I'm really proud of how much effort I put in every day and the focus I maintained for so many years to continue to do this. And I am proud of what I accomplished with that attitude.
Well, Leah, it's been really fun following your career. I've enjoyed it, and all the best on your future endeavors. Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And that's the episode. It's written and edited by me, Matthew Piaro. I had help from Matt Hansen. Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
I don't know why just a simple you're welcome throws me off. I'm like, wait, what's next? What's coming next? You're welcome? That's it? We also had help from Terry McCall. This episode of the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast is produced by Adam Killick. He did the music, too. Special thanks to Ontario Creates for its support. Matt, now that the interview with Leah Kirchman is over, I was thinking, like, someone like Leah, she has been this, like, bulwark in Canadian cycling. She's been there, carried a lot for Canada. And I'm just also thinking of, you know, when Swain Tuft announced his retirement, or at least began his retirement, you start thinking things like, well, wait, who's gonna fill that role? Who's gonna do that? And of course, you know, someone always steps up. But I wonder who. There's Allison Jackson right now, but I feel like there's other young riders who, are coming up that can, you know, still carry Canadian cycling abroad.
But that's kind of the cool part of when someone like a stalwart, as it were, steps down, is that it gives room for someone new to come along and fill their shoes and kind of follow in their footsteps. And also having been sort of half mentored by them, right? Even if they're not on the same team, they've competed with them, they've competed against them, they know them, and they kind of know that, you know, there is a void and they can step up. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
For sure, for sure. And of course, Leah is not just exiting cycling completely. She will be working with Bridge the Gap, which is there. It was founded. It's a Canadian institution that's founded to help young riders make it to the next level. So, yes, the story will continue.
But not this podcast.
No, this podcast is coming to a close. We will have another episode soon. I hope your legs recover in time for the weekend, Matt.
I hope so, too. I really do.
All right, all right. Thank you for listening, everyone. Please rate and review the show. Ride safely, and we'll talk to you later.